From Street to Sky, this is Unity Pacific. Now, Tigalau Ness is a Niuean New Zealand activist and reggae artist, performs as Unity Pacific. Ness was active in opposing apartheid and the 1981 Springbok tour. He was arrested during a protest march and spent 9 months in Mount Eden prison. Tigalau was involved in founding the Polynesian Panthers, a Polynesian rights group modelled after the Black Panthers. He took part in Māori land protests, including the occupation of Bastion Point. And in May of 2009, Ness was presented with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 5th Pacific Music Awards in Auckland, New Zealand, in recognition of more than 30 years in the music industry. His son is Shea Fu, a notable artist also. And Ness has the Panthers hoping that History of the Dawn Raids gets embedded in the school curriculum in Aotearoa. And of course, yesterday the Prime Minister delivered the government's apology for the Dawn Raids, which occurred under both Labour and National governments in the 1970s. A little bit of feedback from here. The big lever, this person says, is end cheap money. This is the number one factor, in my view, in driving up house prices and increasing speculation. Adding more houses will not reduce speculation if houses remain a better bet than other investments. Another one says, until you bring in rent control and the capital gains tax, you will get nowhere. Housing is not an investment tool. Too many people got rich from doing nothing. Regarding berms, I have long grass out the front, hit with the weed eater once a year because it keeps the moisture in. It stops weed spray washing into my well-kept garden and it helps keep property prices down. No apologies, zero Fs given. Okay, imagine living alongside that neighbour. Another one here. Have a look at a house in St Heliers Bay Road in Auckland. A berm sloping in lavender. My parents did that in the 90s. Still there, I believe. Agapanthers initially, but council vetoed, so lavender it is. Regarding the polls, why you think ACT are doing so well, your reckons are coming through. ACT are the only party who stood up for democracy during the firearms confiscation debacle. I voted for ACT on principle. I voted for truth, for justice, for democracy. Clearly an ACT fan there. So let's go to that. The Labour Party could no longer govern alone, according to the latest political poll. The News Hub Reid Research poll has Labour down 9.7 points to 43%, while the National Party is up 1.7% to 28.7%. The results show Labour would need the Green Party, which sits just up to 8.5%, to form a government. And as we said, the ACT Party scored its highest ever rating in last night's poll, up 4.2% to 11.1% of the vote. And New Zealand First, they're in again on 3.4%, or not in rather, but they appear, up 1.5 points. So still life in New Zealand First yet, perhaps. So let's go round the panel. We have two seasoned politicos with us. Heather, how do you see these polls?
Well, I wasn't surprised, I have to say, Wallace. And the Roy Morgan poll came out on Friday, I think it was, which showed quite similar results, not exactly the same figures, but similar trends. And ACT was at 13% in that one. I'm not surprised. I think the government, I think people are sort of cottoning on to the fact that the government's been big on announcements but poor on delivery. Some of those chickens are coming home to roost. There's been a lot of discussion around COVID border policies and the vaccination rollout, so I wasn't at all surprised to see Labour down a bit. And look, in an MMP environment, actually what we had at the last election was a significant outlier. That's quite unusual, having one party that can govern alone. So I wasn't surprised at all. I've been expecting this, and in fact I think we're looking towards a much closer election next time.
Very interesting, the text coming through. Ben says, I'm an old school lefty. Me and my friends will probably vote ACT this time round, as they're taking free and hate speech issues head on. They will not make society better but entangle us and is against each other. I'm not quite sure what that means. Anyway, he says such laws don't work. Peter, how do you read it?
Well, I think there are two aspects to this. I think that the narrowing of the poll, I mean, is to be expected. The last election was clearly an outlier. There's normally a gap of about somewhere between 5 and 10% between the left and the right, and you're getting back to that now. So what that shows is that 4 or 5% in the middle will determine the outcome one way or the other. That's the first point. I think in terms of ACT versus National, or ACT, I think ACT has been a real contrast to National. ACT has actually taken positions on things, stated its ground very clearly, whether it be COVID, whether it be firearms, whether it be hate speech. You know where ACT stands. On the other hand, National pussyfoots on everything. You know, even today I heard Chris Bishop over this issue about New Zealanders who are having medical care overseas, unable to come back to New Zealand, saying, oh, well, you know, it's all very difficult, and, you know, but they should be able to be accommodated. I can't imagine Seymour pussyfooting that way.
No.
And I think that's what people are responding to. The National Party still thinks it's sort of the government by extension and doesn't want to upset too many people, whereas ACT says, we'll give you some answers to the questions that you're asking, and I think it's getting the dividend as a consequence.
Yeah. And this recess, we've had a long recess, 3 weeks, and the ACT caucus has spent this time out on the road. They've been having meetings everywhere. They've been very well attended, much better than meetings that I used to run in the past, I have to say.
Okay.
And they've released significant discussion papers about real issues that are bothering Kiwis. And so not only are they raising the issues, I absolutely agree with Peter, but they're also providing some solutions to those things.
Is it also too because perhaps David Seymour, once seen as a bit of a, not taken seriously, let's just put it that way, okay? So he wasn't taken so seriously early on, but then he, you know, with the Dancing with the Stars and the twerking and that sort of thing.
Oh, I think he's absolutely growing on people.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to say.
He is still a bit quirky, and, you know, every now and then he has a bit of a foot and mouth episode, but people actually see him as someone genuine and wanting to do the right things, and I think that is resonating.
Yeah, I'm not holding a candle for David Seymour, but I'll say this about him. If you ask him a question, you get a straight answer.
Yeah.
Ask the Leader of the Opposition a question, and it will get so many qualifiers that you won't actually know where she stands, and you've probably forgotten what your question was by the time she's finished. So I think that's why people are responding. They like a simple, clearly stated message that they can either say, yeah, I like that, or I don't like it, but they know where they stand.
Now, Claire Trevett said, actually, this is Claire's view here, political journalist, said that the big winner is not ACT, it's the Greens, that they have been almost invisible, she's saying, since the 2020 election, and yet support has held firm and even nudged up a smidgen and is in prime position. I thought that was a very interesting take around the panel on that. It's not ACT that's a big winner, it's in fact the Greens.
Well, the Greens
Heather,
have certainly...
or Peter.
I was just going to say, the Greens have certainly cemented themselves, if these poll results hold, as being Labor's partner. There was always that question as to whether they were the spare wheel or even just sort of, you know, a complete add-on as they were during the coalition. They've now got over that. Labor can't govern without them. The Prime Minister, in fact, said as much today. So that really locks them in. The question will be, if Labor's vote starts to shrink further, and I think it probably could shrink another 3 to 5% over the next year, will Labor then start to cannibalise the Greens to stay in office? That's what's happened before. And will they be that desperate to do it again? Time will tell.
Yeah, that's right. The Greens do tend to poll higher than they than the result they get at elections. So, you know, that's Claire's views one. I think that I wouldn't agree that they have been invisible. I think they've got significant gains out of this government because the Prime Minister recognises that she can't govern alone forever and they do need them there.
And just finally before we move on, National, what of them and what would you suggest they do in the next 6 months? Peter Dunn?
Well, I think they've got to start taking some very clear positions on some controversial issues. We don't know, for instance, what a National-led government would do any differently than the current government over COVID-19. How would they run the vaccine rollout program? What's their attitude to MIQ and whether we still have to lock people up or whether we can let people self-isolate at home? What's their roadmap out of all of this? We've heard none of that from National. Now, they may not wish to be controversial enough to actually give answers to that, but I think unless they do, people are going to write them off as being wishy-washy and not actually having a view on these matters. So my advice to them would be put some stakes in the ground.
Okay,
yeah, I agree with that. And I think that to be successful, National's not going to get there on its own. National and ACT need to be seen to be working as a government in waiting.
All right. Heather Roy, Peter Dunn, thank you for that. Kia ora. And your views on the poll, we're most welcome to 101, or you can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. Now, to this, almost one in three New Zealanders living overseas are planning to return home, and many are planning to stay for good. That is according to a survey by the New Zealand company Kia. And it found that about 11% of those planning to return home are waiting until there's no managed isolation required. So for more on this, I'm joined by the Kia New Zealand Chief Executive, Tony Trustlove. Tony, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace.
That seems to be quite a significant finding to me, that a third of New Zealanders are planning to return home, many planning to stay for good.
Yeah, look, I think it presents a really exciting opportunity for New Zealand. The fact that despite some of our larger expat markets sort of starting to open up with vaccination programs, that a number of these offshore Kiwis are still looking so favourably on New Zealand and wanting to come home and join us here.
So a million Kiwis overseas, a third of them want to come home and stay for good. Is that a good thing for New Zealand, or is that going to be a real problem?
We think it's going to be a really fantastic thing for New Zealand. You know, we have well-documented labour shortages and issues with productivity, and we think the international skills and experience and larger market experience of these Kiwis could really add some value to our Kiwi companies.
The panel will jump in here, or will we have tens of thousands of really disenfranchised, disaffected expats who've come home, can't get the money they've been earning overseas?
Look, I think that's a distinct possibility, and that's really what the Kia Future Aspirations Report is calling for. Because this is intentions data, we have an opportunity, a moment in time, to really help land them. And so the question is, you know, what can we as New Zealand make sure that these Kiwis do come home and prosper and not leave again other more untoward situations?
Peter?
Well, I think that something that Tony said earlier is relevant here too. It's they want to come to a post-MIQ environment. Most of these people will have been vaccinated. They will expect, as New Zealanders, to be able to return home and take up their lives, not be told you're returning home, to go into a compulsory isolation for 2 weeks. So I think that's the first point. And I think if they do end up coming here and find that some of these restrictions that they're not used to are still in place, then I think rather than being delighted to be home, they'll be very disillusioned. I think the second point is obviously you then start to think, well, what are the impacts on things like housing, which we've talked about, schools, all of those sorts of things from having these people. But, you know, we can't deny them that opportunity. They're New Zealanders. This is their home. But I just think, there may be a case of the grass looking pretty much greener than it really is.
Mm.
I agree about the MIQ. I think that I've got a daughter and her partner, they're overseas, and they've looked a couple of times at coming back, but wait is so long. Mm. They're both now fully vaccinated, and they're thinking, why should we come and spend 2 weeks at our own cost in a hotel when actually there's very little danger? And so they'll stay overseas for a bit longer. Their intention has always been to come back.
Oh, always been to come back.
Yes, yep. So it's always go, travel, see the world, and then come back. And this is certainly where they will want to have children. I think that New Zealanders have always wanted to probably come, most have wanted to come home and bring their children up here and in an environment that they feel very comfortable with. And I think they've often sacrificed salary for those lifestyle advantages or choices that they make. So I wouldn't make quite so much of that as you were pointing out, Wallace. I think that it's a balancing act, and I don't think money's the first thing. But look, I think also as the world normalises and vaccination's going to be a big shaper, I think that there will be less pandemic-driven reverse migration anyway, because people will think, oh, well, we can stay for another couple of years, we can travel a little bit more. So I think it'll balance itself out, to be honest.
Just finally, Tony, before you go, just some very brief advice for New Zealand businesses who are hoping to recruit people who are returning.
Yeah, what we're hearing both in the survey and anecdotally is that Kiwis who are here, who are on the ground in New Zealand, are often being discounted because they don't have New Zealand experience, instead of being potentially valued because of their offshore experience. And so I think the message here is, you know, let's think outside the box a little bit with these Kiwis coming home, you know, not perhaps just the job description that's in front for this role, but of the wider value that they could bring to an organisation with some of their skills and experiences. And certainly, just to echo some of Heather's points, these Kiwis are coming home for lifestyle. That comes through clearly in the report. And so salary is less of an issue.
It is about
an opportunity to give back.
Okay, Tony, kia ora for that. I appreciate you being on the program. That's Tony Truslove there, who is the Kia New Zealand Chief Executive. It's 11 to 5. The panel, RNZ National, Peter Dunn and Heather Roy with me today. Now, so for something very different, and this is wonderful. It's about a sports collection. An Invercargill sports fan has collected more than 20,000 pieces of sporting memorabilia, writes Jamie Serlin stuff. Carl Wilson's rugby jersey includes 85 from the All Blacks, including Colin Meads and Jonah Lomu, as well as Springbok captain Danny Craven from 1937. So I am with collector Carl Wilson. Welcome to the program, Carl.
Hey, g'day, mate. How you doing?
I'm very well. How long? I've seen the images, I've seen the video of your wonderful memorabilia collection. How long have you been collecting?
I started when I was just a kid, really, and you know, I was trawling through the antique or second-hand shops looking for, dare I say it, Elvis Presley LPs or marble top bottles. I've always had that passion to collect. Yeah.
Do you, I'm thinking of a question I'm going to ask about the treasure item that I think is pretty cool. But do you have a most treasured item?
Yeah, quite a few, really. Probably George Napier's jersey from 1924.
What?
One of the ones I like. And
you have a George Napier jersey?
Yep, from 1924 versus Cardiff, and I managed to bring that back from Wales, and that was quite an emotional moment when I opened that parcel up, just because of the mana with that jersey. And on the Olympic theme, I've got a 1924 New Zealand blazer and a 1936 blazer. We only sent four Olympians to both those games, so that's Hitler's games and the Paris games.
Gosh.
Returned from overseas.
One that that caught my mind, my attention rather, was the white All Black jersey.
Yeah, Joe Karam, 1975 versus Scotland. Mm. That was the Waterloo. Well, that jersey was used. One of those famous tests was known as the water polo test or Waterloo test in Auckland. But he scored quite a few points in that jersey.
Pretty cool collection, eh, Heather?
It is. That's just amazing. What is it about Invercargill, Carl? Because there's Bill Richards Richardson's Transport World, which is an absolutely fantastic museum, and my favourite shop in Invercargill was E. Hayes and Sons, where you've got all the hardware, and then you wander through, and there's all these museum displays of motors everywhere. It's just amazing. Yeah. And now there's Carl Wilson Sports Museum. Well done.
Yeah. Mine pales compared to the truck museum, I can tell you. I know Joss and her blood should be bottled. amazing people.
But you've got an amazing collection now too. That's really impressive.
Carl, I'm deeply envious of you. I'm someone who loves museums and loves what they've got, and I've long had this view that around New Zealand there are these pockets of wonderful expertise that we don't know about, and yet we almost need to have a national census of all of the hobby collectors of wonderful things to know what we've actually got available to us in New Zealand, how they can be preserved and how they can be protected for the future. And you've done a sterling job. I just was thinking as you were talking, I was thinking with some embarrassment about my grandfather was an All Black in 1922, and I can remember had his jersey at home that was so terribly moth-eaten and destroyed, because they were heavy woolen jerseys in those days, that you know, it just didn't survive. But you think, you know, these things are part of our national heritage and our national character, and people like Carl, who store them and lovingly care for them, are doing a huge service. And so I'm just deeply envious and sort of admiring of what you do.
So people can come through and look at your museum, Carl?
Yeah, I predominantly open it up for charities to do a bit of fundraising, so I don't open it up to the public. It's just, you know, if a charity wants to come through and they want to charge $10 or $20, I'm happy to sit there and talk for an hour and a half about it.
That's great.
How do you get your memorabilia? You said you went to auctions and antique stores, or do people come to you and say, we've got something we want to gift to the museum?
Yeah, I do. I do get a little bit of that. Not a lot, to be fair. Like, there's a National Rugby Museum in Palmerston North, and they do a sterling job. They do a wonderful job, actually. And I know the the chaps up there that run it quite well. This has just been a hobby of mine that's sort of grown a wee bit out of hand over the years. I probably buy 99% of what I get, and I trawl the auctions around the world, and if I see something that's New Zealand related, then I'm all over it.
Carl, thank you so much for being on the panel. It's just so lovely to have you join us, and keep up the collecting.
Thank you for the time.
Yeah, and we never even got to talk about the turnstile from Kara's book from the House of Pain that he picked up a couple of months ago. Peter, you are right. Hey, it's those small collections around the country. You know, he's doing all of us a service, really. His passion is actually making sure this memorabilia is here for all of New Zealanders.
Well, when I was Internal Affairs Minister and had an interest in these things, I was always saying to the people at the archives and the museum, what about all the local historical societies and historical groups around New Zealand? What do we know about what they've got? Because I suspect there'll be treasures there in some of these little storehouses or under people's beds that are priceless. We don't know about them. We know about the big things, but not these other little things. And Carl's a classic case in point.
Now, finally, to our small business segment, our local small business segment, and we do this every Monday, so highlighting small business, and more often than not, having recently started up with a focus on New Zealand made and or designed and owned. And by the way, if you have a small business that you might like to be profiled, email us, thepanel@rnz.co.nz. But there aren't many local companies giving shoemaking a go, so we thought we'd take a look at a local company making some pretty cool sneakers. They're called Spirit Shoes. That is S-P-I-R-I-T. And Jack Montgomery is one of the founders. Jack, welcome.
Hi, Willis. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you on. Tell us how it started.
Yeah, so I think, like a lot of Kiwis, at the beginning of COVID last year, me and my university friend were looking to do something with our time. And we were looking into categories, we're looking at doing apparel, and then we really landed on shoes. A lot of people think us crazy for doing it because of the enormous competition out there. But that challenge really is what inspires us and got us started.
That's why we got you on, Jack, because, you know, you can design a sort of a T-shirt or even a blazer or trousers, all very good, but shoe, enormous competition. How does one go about designing a shoe?
Yeah, so we're actually fortunate enough to have a brilliant manufacturing partner. My co-founder, he's also has experience in product design and things like that. And basically, we made it a very collaborative sort of process, so letting the manufacturer lead the way. And then we were just feeding in design elements, making a lot of tweaks through the early stages of last year until we finally settled on our final prototype, which flowed through to being our first shoe model, the Spirit Sidekicks, which actually launched this year.
Amazing. Yeah, so I feel in you, and I'll sneak that website in, and that is spiritshoes.store. But Heather, a lot of bravery, eh? A young team here off the back of COVID starting a new business.
Yeah, absolutely. Your shoes are very price sensitive, Jack, which surprised me. I was thinking, hard to compete with international markets, and how do you keep that price where it is?
Well, I mean, to start with, that's actually one of our key visions as a brand. It's to come in and to really challenge the big existing players that have existed for a long time and really aren't that fresh. So we want to come in and not only create a brilliant brand that people can resonate with, so essentially us producing with our friends and for our friends and family, but then also coming in with an accessible price. So our shoes are priced at $95 New Zealand through our website.
95 bucks?
Yes, isn't that great?
What?
and I love your golden spirits, Jack. That's very Willy Wonka.
You can do all the homework, Heather.
Jack, Peter. I'm just going to ask, you know, I think this is a fantastic initiative, highly developed for the price market, obviously developed for the New Zealand market. What would you say your special selling point or your unique selling point is over others?
Yeah, so I think it starts with that price. And then the secondary piece very much is getting creative with our marketing. So the big sort of marketing play that also happens to not just be a marketing play, but something very special for me is the is our partnership with Papakura High School. So in South Auckland school, we've partnered
Good on you.
And hey, Jack. Every pair sold, we gift a pair.
We're all out of time.
That's pretty cool.
I'm going to sneak in that website again. That is spiritshoes.store. Kia ora, Jack, and best of luck to you. And Peter Dunn, Heather Roy, thank you for being with us this Monday. I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thank you, Wallace.
I'm Wallace Chapman. I'm back tomorrow, 3:45. Till then, see you later.